because someone told me when I was in the midst of doing the manuscript for this book on the trail of Genghis Khan, I was quite overwhelmed and ended up taking 4 years. And this author said to me, "Well, you'd never write a book knew what it was going to be," and I think that speaks volumes about the process of writing, making a film, all those kind of creative things. Because just like the journey itself, I spent 3.5 years on horseback with my little dog Tigan and 3 horses, 2 pack horses, and a riding horse, riding from Mongolia to Hungary. Just like that journey, writing the book is. Every day is full of uncertainty and you never quite know where it's going. And I started writing the book simultaneously as I came up here to Byron. I met my good friend and editor, Mike Bolson, and we started going through things and sorting out what length of documentary we could make. And that kind of got put on ice for a while. We couldn't get the funding. And I started writing the book. I got a contract. And then suddenly we got the funding from ZDF in Germany and the ABC here. And then it was all go with the film for a couple of years, and then it was 4 years writing the book. So I'm still on the same journey. I think the lovely thing about writing is that you're not confined by any like time limit for television of 56 minutes for an episode or 25 minutes. A book can be as long as it needs to be. And my original draft was about 300,000 words, about 1,000 pages, and the final book's. That is a pretty hefty one. It's about 520 pages with photographs and maps. But, you know, for me, writing the book was important for myself because I set off in 2004 with this dream to follow in the footsteps of nomads and the descendants of Genghis Khan, who had set up this greatest land empire that's ever been. When I was 21, I'd been in the Gobi Desert on my bicycle, actually, been riding through on the way to Beijing, and suddenly these horsemen and horsewomen would just appear from over the horizon. They'd come over and say hello and then gallop off to wherever they please, and it left us feeling like wimpy tourists pushing our bikes through a land where it can be minus 50 degrees in the winter, plus 50 degrees in the summer. There are people who live well beyond the confines of our society. There's no private property, there's no fences for thousands of miles, and they don't have, you know, thick brick walls to insulate them from the extremes, just a couple of inches of tent felt and a pile of dried dung to keep them warm as fuel. And it left me wanting to know, you know, who these people really, really were. So I set off with questions that became important for the book. You know, what was it like to step into that nomad world, the world without fences, a world that transcends the modern era of mechanics and roads and planes and everything else? And what was it like for these nomadic people who made these journeys thousands of kilometres into Europe and to look into this sedentary way of life? And eventually I came to realise that certainly back then in medieval times in Europe, people were like goldfish in a bowl. Often they didn't walk much beyond their own parishes, and they couldn't travel far. Whilst the Mongols were traversing the continent, there was no barriers in their minds. I set out wanting to know what had happened to these nomadic cultures in Soviet times. In Kazakhstan, for example, 1/3 of the people had died in an artificial famine in the 1930s. Problem was that I couldn't ride a horse. When I was 7, I was bucked off at home. It was the first time I was put on. I fell off, broke my arm very badly, and shipped off to hospital, and I hadn't been back on since. I spent about 5 days on a horse in the Victorian Alps before I went to Mongolia, and then it was just a long process of learning. On the 5th day of the trip, my horses were stolen in the middle of the night. The first day of the journey, I left this little town called Harahorin, where what used to be the capital of the Mongol Empire, and these people had gathered to see this Australian head off in the footsteps of their ancestors. And I was too nervous to get on the horse, and the horse was too nervous to accept me, so I walked out of town. So it wasn't a very auspicious kind of beginning, but I learnt early on, when I managed to recapture my horses, that a man on the steps without friends is as narrow as a finger, and a man on the step with friends is as wide as the step. So it was a process of getting to know the people, leaving my excess baggage behind as a Westerner, and I went over there as a blank slate, and I learnt the nomadic way of horsemanship, which which is really important. It's through the horse, of course, that they engage with their environment and have done for five or six thousand years. So they're all the things I set off with in my mind and to write the book as well when I finished, except, of course, the journey became much more and much more difficult and much longer than I'd ever imagined. The documentary has been screened, they don't really tell me, but I know it's been screened, it's been very popular in Germany and France and all German and French territories. It's been last year in Sweden, and there was one stage it was right across to India and Bangladesh and lots of places. It's been a wonderful thing to share, because when I came home, I mean, I met people, whether it be Kazakhs, Mongols, Kalmyks. Kalmyks have the only Buddhist republic in geographical Europe, in southern Russia. And I felt an obligation, really, to kind of paint a picture of these people's lives who they'd shared so much with me. I probably stayed with about 90 families en route. I felt that part of the world, Central Asia, Mongolia, in that history, it's a bit like a geographical blind spot for most of us, a bit of a black hole in our knowledge, and it's an opportunity to share these people's lives and give them a voice where they don't normally have one in our society.